Presenting a proven way to build your endowment with a sustainable gift planning program, this is the Gift Planning Development Podcast, an ongoing forum designed to help you meet all of your gift planning goals.
It's the Gift Planning Development Podcast. I'm your host today, Joe Tumalo. We bring these podcasts to you a couple times a month. We share thought leaders and people in the industry and all aspects of fundraising that we hope will add value to you, to your program, to your self-development. If you have any ideas on a topic or speaker that you'd like to have us feature, please let us know at info@giftplanningdevelopment.com. This morning, I am with my guest, Penny Calden, who comes to us from... Penny, what state? What's the nickname of the state you are from? Is there a nickname for it?
No. Well, I don't know. It might be called the rainy state.
The rainy state. Well, the beautiful coastal state, how about that, of Oregon?
There you go.
Right? Yeah. And Penny's company is called Philanthropy 212. And Penny, we met, you were a client of ours.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we had the pleasure to work together for a little bit. And then you've been, we are chatting October of 2019, and you're just, this year, started your consulting practice.
That's right.
Yeah. Wonderful. And you are going at it strong with a book, and we'll talk about the book, and you started your own podcast as well, which is great. And the topic that you wanted to talk about today is a topic that we know a little bit about, plan giving. And I'm glad you brought it up, because I don't know, of all the topics we've done, I don't know if we've actually done plan giving of all things, because I have a tendency to think, well, that's what we talk about. Let's do something different.
Yeah, but I think that plan giving... You know, I spent 25 years as a fundraising executive, primarily in healthcare, with small, mid, and very large healthcare systems. And I think that in the large healthcare systems, you know, there are resources for plan giving. Typically, there's a plan giving director who is an attorney, if not more than that. But in the small to mid shops that I've worked with and in, they do not have resources dedicated. They don't have a plan giving director, and they typically don't have anyone on staff or a resource who is an expert. And it tends to scare them away from doing plan giving programs. And I've witnessed that firsthand as an employee and as a proponent of philanthropy. But I'm really not sure that you can have a fully developed program in a major gifts program, which is, of course, what most of us should be reaching for, without having plan gift program. I think donors talk about both. But plan giving still today is a bit shrouded in mystique and an aura of being critical, but very, very complicated. And, you know, you think you need to bring in lawyers and accountants, and it's scary, so you don't want to touch it. And there are a lot of legalities involved, and there's definitely time to bring in a consultant such as yourself, but you can get started without that. Most plan gifts are bequests. So you can certainly put on your literature, have you considered leaving XYZ organization in your will. So, you know, if a donor walked in and handed you a check, you wouldn't be frightened. But if a donor comes in and says, hey, I want to talk to you about how I can make a significant gift, forget about plan giving. Forget those words for just a minute. All they do is create a perception in your mind that you have to find all these other people to do this, because you can't. But I can't tell you how many donors have come in and said, I want to do a significant gift. And my first words are, have you named us in your will?
Great. So I'd like to talk a little bit about healthcare. I've been so blessed and grateful lately to do some interim work at a hospital here in the Pennsylvania region. And my first experience working in a hospital. And it obviously, healthcare has its challenges, right? And just wonder, because it just seems, it's my interpretation, and it's been just about a year or so, and I'm there just a couple days a week, but it's kind of like, I think of an independent school, let's say like a K-12 school, where, you know, you've got to get, a lot of the fundraising is coming from current parents, people that are engaged now, right? It's a lot of cash, get cash, go get cash in the door now, get them while they're here, because when their child graduates, that from the parent's standpoint, for the most part, that's going to, that connection, that affinity is going to wane. And maybe I'm master of the obvious here, but with a patient, and we use that term grateful patient so loosely, or so, you know, assuming they're grateful, right? I guess if they're not grateful, they wouldn't be donating. But with people that are just have had a hospital experience, or maybe they're ongoing patients, it just seems like get them now, get them while they're, while it's hot, and then just get the cash. So is that enough to kind of have your riff on that a little bit, and your thoughts on plan giving specific to hospitals and maybe some of the challenges specific to that sector?
I think everyone has that challenge. You know, in the last decade or so, our industry, the philanthropic industry, has really leaned toward a lot of work in metrics and KPIs, and those are important. They help guide your work. They help you figure out what's effective and what isn't, but they shouldn't drive your relationship building. So numbers about money coming in don't drive relationships. So plan giving is all about relationships, and you're not going to get a gift from a grateful patient or an alumni or a parent of a student in your school if you don't have a relationship with them. Yes, you might get an annual gift, but unless you're building that relationship, you're certainly not going to get a major gift, which is what people are looking for. And you are never going to get to the conversation with them about a plan gift to ensure the future of the organization they care about so much today. So I think that it, again, all goes back to those relationships, regardless of what social sector you're in. You still have to build those relationships. And so plan giving is the ultimate relationship, right? You, they have built a really good affinity for the organization, and they want to do something major to ensure the future. And most donors who do plan gifts, they're also ensuring their values. And the best way to do that is through a plan gift. But regardless, you're never going to get there unless you learn them, get to know them, just as you would approach any donor.
Agreed. Now, how about those out there that are saying, well, Penny, this is all good, well and good, but my boss is, I'm a major gift officer. We don't have a plan giving person. I don't have any metrics around plan giving. And I'm really busting my butt, working long hours. This is hard work, as we know, raising major gifts, cash in the door, and that's all people care about. So why would I, you know, I'm well-intended. I really care about the work I'm doing, but if my metrics, my job security really doesn't seem to be affected by plan giving. So I'll keep an eye out for it, but I'm not going out of my way to have those conversations because my boss and leadership don't seem to care either way.
No, I get that. And unfortunately, that is true in a lot of organizations. But I think you have to remember that as a philanthropic representative, as a gift advisor, you have to look at what's best for the donor. And you can still get a major gift, but still have that plan gift conversation. Again, it goes back to, hey, have you considered leaving us in your will? Do you have a lapsed insurance policy? How about your IRA? You know, have you thought about what you're going to do with that? Having some basic information about these gifts is always a good idea. You can bring it up in a major gift conversation and still get the major gift, but also plant the seeds or even encourage a plan gift while you're doing that. And I think we have to go back to remember that we are representatives of the donor. Yes, we work for our organization, but we talk a lot in the industry about being donor-centric. That's what it means to be donor-centric, is you are looking at those conversations with donors, with the donor first, and going to do what they want to do, explore the opportunities with them. That's what major gifts is all about. And honestly, when you're doing that, it is not a stretch to start having those same conversations about plan gifts.
I have I've developed a business friendship with a guy named Dan Shepard, who's here in Pennsylvania. His business is frontlinefundraiser.com. And he has an online course I took a while ago, and it really, really was a game changer for me. And he says that there are four questions we should ultimately ask every donor. Why do you care about our organization? Hopefully, all fundraisers are asking that, right?
Yeah.
Second question is what's about our work is most important to you? What do you want to support? What's your vision? Is it, do you want to support the nurses, physicians, patient care, facilities, unrestricted? And hopefully most people are having that conversation. The third one I'll skip for a second because you said most people skip that. And then the fourth question is the actual ask. Will you make a gift? Whatever, as we say. But the third one is how. That's what most people skip. That's what we're talking about, right? It's honoring the donor, as you said, giving them options, which people want options, especially baby boomer generation people, donors, and giving them the option to say, if you want to have a conversation about how we can accomplish what we just talked about, can we have a how conversation? How would we do this? Would it be a cash gift? Would it be some of the bequests, the gifts that you mentioned just a minute ago? Would it be a combination? Would it be pledges, right? So I love that. And I think it's right in line with what you're saying. It's treat everybody just have it in there. It's not a separate thing. It's not something that I have to carry around on my back that weighs me down or I'm worried about. It's, here's my toolkit. I have all these tools, cash, gifts, pledges, deferred gifts, all this. Let's figure out what makes sense for you as the donor.
Exactly. That's being donor-centric. And if the donor has assets they can talk to you about making a gift, you know, I've had many donors when I'm talking to them, particularly in a campaign. Yeah, they want to make a current gift to the campaign, but they also want to talk about sustainability. And when I'm gone, this program I care about so much, how am I going to make sure it's always here? So I've had a lot of conversations with donors about that, and they do care. And I think that you're right on. The trick is ask, what are you interested in? How do you want to make this gift? A question that I've often asked donors that really creates a lot of thought is, how do you want to ensure your values? You know, you ensure your car, your house, your lives, your kids, your boat, whatever it might be. But what about the most important thing, your values and what you believe in to be important in this world? How are you ensuring those? And that really creates some thought on the donor's part about, yeah, right. I mean, these are things I really care about and I care about my community. How am I going to do that?
Beautiful, right? So I often think of psychiatrists, therapists who, when they are talking to the patient or client, The patient client's doing most of the talking and the therapist is there as a facilitator to help the client figure out for themselves the answer many times.
Exactly. Right?
And so I think in the fundraising space, if we are truly being donor-centered, as you say, right, and provided that the donor is willing to have this conversation, right, which is some things we don't talk a lot about. What if the donor, not every donor wants to have this conversation, right?
No.
It's like, I'll just, you're in my will. I don't want to talk about it. Or I'll do something in my retirement plan, but I don't want to document it. I don't want to talk about it, right? So how do you set up those conversations? I hope I'm using this term, this phrase correctly. It's a Jesuit expression, listening from discernment. And I think, if memory serves, that's exactly what we're talking about. It's helping the person that you're speaking to, that's doing most of the talking, help them figure out for themselves. So to your point, you know, how am I ensuring my values, right? Boy, I never thought about that, Penny, right? People aren't thinking about this stuff day to day. So there's a lot there to unpack, but.
They don't, but isn't that part of our job as donor representatives, if you will, to ask the questions? You know, how do you want to do this? Asking questions. I've never had a donor get upset because I asked the question. I have had donors, as you say, tell me, I don't want to talk about this right now. Mm. And you have to respect that. But depending on your relationship with them, I've often come back and said, I get that. You know, none of us want to think about that. But when you're ready, I would love to have the conversation with you, regardless of whether or not our organization is in your long-term plans. I think it's something really important as somebody who is philanthropic to start thinking about.
Great. We've kind of a little bit of a sidetrack a little bit, but because of your vast hospital experience, we'd love to leverage that on this podcast. Have you been in at places where they just have like an incredible amount of funds, like too many funds, hundreds and hundreds of funds that donors have started that nobody's using, that just never get used? The money just sits there forever?
Yes.
You have any ideas around how to?
Oh, sure. Well, two things. One of the things I've seen, as you said, is a ton of funds. There were no restrictions on the amount. So you've got funds with $100 in them up to, you know, six figures. And the donors wanted to set up these funds, so we let them set them up. But what I've done is a lot of times there's a lot of overlap. So you're hurting the hospital when you do this or your organization because you're creating restrictions within restrictions within restrictions. So you might have a cancer fund and it's got 20 sub funds under it. Oh, this is only for women's breast exams. This is only for this kind of test. This is only for this activity. We've created a lot of restrictions within a restricted fund already. So the first thing you have to do is go about very sensitively combine those funds and go talk to donors if they're still around and really ask them, what was your true intent? Because I know you want to help people who are being treated for cancer, but because of all the restrictions, we're really not able to do that. Can we talk about changing this a little bit? And the other thing is that you always want to have gift agreements because your gift agreements tell you when you can change it. You know, you have the out clause in a gift agreement that always says, if for some reason the purpose of this fund ceases to exist, the foundation board or whichever board governs has the ability to use the money for something as closely as possible to it. So gift agreements are super important. Not using the money is, to me, that's not what donors want. They didn't give you the money for it to sit in a portfolio. So oftentimes what I do is reach out to those in the organization the money was intended for and say, did you know you have this money available to you? And most of the time they have no idea. Mm. They had no idea there was a fund there. So that's a conversation I have with them. And we sit down and say, you know, this is what the donor intended. What have you got going on? How can we help you? And it's amazing how many times that they've been dreaming about something or wishing they had something that all the time the money was sitting in the foundation that could have achieved it.
And have you found, let's say, obviously the donor is still alive or could be found. Well, could be either one. Either the donor could be alive or could have been a realized bequest, but the family members are donors or connected. Have you had any luck in doing that? So we go, the money's been sitting there. Let's say we have $50,000 in there. Nobody's been doing anything with it. You connect with the department head and they say, oh, we have all these needs, funding needs, and then go back to the donor's heirs or the donor themselves and been able to parlay that, leverage that into something bigger. So let's take it from 50 to whatever.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. We had a donor. I have a good example. We had a donor who family that started a fund. Again, it was for cancer treatment. And went back to them and said, you know, I brought them a proposal to use the money that we had worked out with the folks at the cancer center, the physicians, and they were very excited about it. They were so excited that this money was going to have an impact that the entire family started donating to the fund again. They got excited. Wow, nice. You mean you're going to do something with this? This is what we were hoping for. Of course, I've also had donors who... on the other side of that, you also have to be willing to do the right thing by a donor. And I think that that falls well into the planned gift arena is, you know, one particular donor comes to mind, an amazing gentleman, and we asked him for a gift we were building a new hospital. And he said, and he was so excited and so thrilled because, you know, he had had an experience in his family with a very serious burn situation. And he wanted to give to a burn fund. It was just something we couldn't do. He wanted to start a burn unit. It wasn't feasible for us. So we hooked him, or I did. I called a colleague who they did have a really renowned burn unit and put them together so that this donor could achieve what he wanted to. Now that's donor centric. and that's doing the right thing by the donor. He came back later and gave us a very nice gift. So I think everybody won, but he trusted the relationship that he and I ended up having, and the relationship he had with our organization was incredible because the level of trust we built with him on that at that moment was just stratospheric. And he ended up doing a very amazing planned gift for the organization as well. So when I talk about planned gifts and major gifts and being donor-centric, that's how it works. That's the level of trust you need to get to. And you start that conversation going back to what you said with those four questions. And you keep having that conversation. It's not going to happen overnight. Major gifts don't happen overnight. They happen more quickly than planned gifts for sure. But they don't happen overnight. And there's no reason you can't also have the planned gift conversation.
Nice. And so as we were talking about before, a lot of the smaller hospitals, I think, as you mentioned, don't have planned giving people, and so the major gift officer. So let's say major gift officer might be listening, or anywhere, don't have a planned giving person on staff. If there are maybe three things, if possible, like what are the three top things you would say they need to have in place to be in the business, in the planned giving business?
I think you have to invest in yourself to learn about planned giving. So I am not an accountant. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a planned gift expert by any stretch of the imagination. But I've had many planned gift conversations because I have taken the time to learn enough about the gifts and enough about the different vehicles that I can at least start the conversation and say, well, have you thought about this or this? I'm not sure what's right for you, but these are some ideas. So you have to have enough basic knowledge to be able to talk about the concepts and the ideas. After that, I shut up because I'm not an attorney and I'm not a planned gift expert like you, Joe. So that's when I would either like call you or I would have the person, I would give them concepts and illustrations and say, hey, you know, have a conversation with your attorney, go talk to your accountant and see if any of these might be viable for you. I had a donor who came to me and said, I have nobody in my life. I love this organization. I want to give everything to the organization. And I need to figure out how to do that. And I said, okay, well, let's have a conversation about what your assets, you know, what you're thinking about as far as assets go. Well, she had this condo that was worth a lot of money and then a lot of IRAs and things like that. And so I gave her a couple concepts with featuring, you know, her condo and maybe a bargain sale or leaving it in her estate. And then I did another couple illustrations and gave her some ideas. And then told her she absolutely had to talk to an attorney, that was as far as I went. And so I think you have to know your limitations. So invest in yourself and understand the concepts. Know your limitations and respect those. And there are a lot of people out there like Joe and planned gift experts who can help you through complicated gifts. And you need to be able to know who those people are and rely on them.
And when you have a donor who says, well, I don't have a will. I mean, I don't have a will. I don't have my estate plans. I don't know any attorneys. How do you answer, you know, do you know anybody, Penny, that I can call that could help me with this? How would you typically handle those?
I keep a list. Mm-hmm. I do keep a list of people and I keep it as, I know that those people are good. I probably have dealt with them before. But I give them a list and then it's up to them to choose. Yeah. And a lot of times they'll come back and say, well, come on, really, who do you recommend? You know, come on, tell me, just point to it. Who do I go to? and I say, you know, those people are all good. You need to find someone you can trust. Call them up, talk to them, see if you feel comfortable with them. Somebody I might feel comfortable with, you might not. So you really need to check it out yourself. I don't go there because I don't want to have any conflict of interest. I don't want to be seen as influencing the donor. I want it to be as above board and ethical as possible that the donor's making the choice. For myself, for people I call to help me, again, I have one or two that I have found who are extremely, I feel confident in their knowledge. I feel confident that they're ethical. I feel confident that they know what they're doing. And I call them. You know, when I wanted to start a planned gift program, do a campaign, you know, you guys had a method that I heard at a conference that you talked about a way to do an endowment campaign. And I was so interested and intrigued. And of course, I called about it and had some conversations and we ended up working together and it was amazingly successful. But I felt comfortable and I felt confident that this was something that would work. And so I think that as a major gift person and not a planned gift person, that's what I look for.
Great. So there are resources and thank you for the endorsement. And this is really not about...
No, but...
But thank you for that. So, but for people, if they say, well, yeah, that's great, but we don't have that kind of money. We want to do it ourselves. Any suggestions for them on as far as setting it up?
Yeah, definitely have your policies in place. You have got to have a gift acceptance policy. You have to have accounting. You have to know how to count major or plan gifts. You need to know how to book them or count them, how it works. And the Association of Charitable Gift Planners has a lot of good information on how to do that and how to set up your policies. So definitely have your policies in place. They will save you every time.
And that is...
No, that's my key thing is it's not exciting. It's a lot of hard work to put your policies together, but there's lots of good examples out there and take advantage of that and put them in place before you start anything.
Yeah, and that, for those listening, to your point, it's a great resource, the National Association of Charitable Gift Planners. And the website is charitablegiftplanners.org.
Right.
So to your point, lots of great resources for education, for learning, for meeting other people. Most major cities have some type of a chapter, a council, they call them, Plan Giving Council. They do, as you mentioned, they did at one point have a sample template of gift acceptance policy that you can download and just customize it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's the Legacy Society. Do you have any thoughts around, you think people care, really give to whatever's about donors, about Legacy Societies? What's your experience?
I don't know.
Especially in healthcare, I should say. Yeah. Keeping it in the hospital. Sorry to interrupt.
It depends. It's like donor recognition. Everybody is different. I think the purpose of a Legacy Society and the value of having one is it helps recognize donors and appreciate them while they're alive. It's kind of like painters only start selling after they die. Isn't that tragic? Mm. So it gives the organization, it's more about the organization's opportunity to say thank you and to appreciate their investment in the organization's mission, more so than, at least in my experience, more so than donors really wanting recognition. Most of them really don't care about that, but they do care about the example they're setting. And they understand that it helps the organization attract other people to think about gifts of that nature. So I think donors are okay with it, but I've never met one who did something to be in a society.
Well, anything else that you want to make sure we cover that you think might be helpful for folks?
No, I just want to reiterate that a lot of fundraisers are so afraid of planned giving. And I know this, I used to be one of them. So at the end of the day, it's really still all about relationships. And it's important you put those process and policies in place to accept and manage the planned gifts, which is where you can seek help. But the expectations and relationships are the key to success.
Beautifully said. Boy, what a great way to end.
There you go.
Yeah. So if people want to get in touch with you, Penny, we didn't really talk about your business. Correct me if I have any of this wrong. You help. Well, Lily, you say you could do better than I can as far as what you offer, your practice, how you help folks.
Right. Well, as you know, again, 25 years in the field, there are some areas I've seen that don't get a lot of attention that should. And one of those is, you know, a program health checkup, just looking at your program periodically, having an outside person look at it objectively to see where there might be opportunities. We all get into the rut of, well, we've done it this way, it's worked, we'll just keep doing this. But sometimes keeping doing this means you're missing out on that. So some bringing in and just looking at a program and putting together some ideas for folks on how they can, you know, little tweak to do success, fundraising roadmaps and strategies, really just a lot of system work. And they call it development for a reason. Mm. You know, you move one step at a time toward the highest ultimate level of philanthropy at your organization. And board and leadership essentials, you know, I have found in my career, I spend a lot of time and attention on my board, because they, by myself, can I raise money? You bet. If my board is raising money, it goes into the stratosphere. So board leadership and really compelling communications, you really need to be able to speak to your donors in a lot of different ways. And it's different how you do that from, I started my career at a Fortune 500 company doing communications. And trust me, when I went into philanthropy, it was very, very different. I had a huge learning curve on that. So those are the key areas I spend my time, because I think they're the most effective ways to help organizations achieve a higher level of success.
And how can people get in touch with you?
They can, my website is www.philanthropy212.com, and they can get on the website, and I'm easy to connect with. And I'm also on LinkedIn, so you can connect with me there as well.
Wonderful. And what else? The book, you have this cool little book that you have out.
Oh, it's fun. It's an ebook that I put together on just some of these topics. And it's called Loving the Art of Fundraising, Leadership Talks. And I had 10 really awesome colleagues who contributed their experiences to help illustrate that fundraising is an art. And so we I put together these stories that have really key little jewels and gems in them. So it's just a fun book. You can get on my website and download it or email me and I can send it to you.
Wonderful. Penny Galton, thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate the conversation. It was fun.
It was. Until next time, all the best.
You too.
Thank you for listening to the Gift Planning Development Podcast. For more information on any of the topics you've heard about today, please go to giftplanningdevelopment.com.